Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Look at the notes this time.
On the docket for today's program, the desire to live, work, and play lifestyles is not slowing down in Florida as a major mixed-use properties are coming and continue to be developed throughout the entire state, as well as the retail industry continues to evolve. How to do traditional brick-and-mortar retailers attract and retain clients in urban and suburban geographic retail? Today, we'll be discussing mixed-use properties with Nectaria. Did I do justice to your last name?
Nectaria. First name?
Nectaria, I'm sorry. Chakas, that I could do.
Yes, you can.
And you're from the law firm of, go ahead.
Lockery and Chakas.
Lockery and Chakas.
There's a good ring to it.
It does, doesn't it? Attorney Chakas is extensively experienced involving representing developers of commercial, residential, mixed-use, and urban development projects. But first, I'd like to welcome the legal panel for today's program, Attorney Gary Singer, who's a real estate board-certified attorney and all-around good guy. Welcome.
How you doing, Phil?
I'm doing good, Gary.
Good.
Always good to see you. And, of course, our newest attorney, legal panelist, Eric Yankowitz. Good afternoon, Eric.
Good to see you all here today as well.
Yeah, I was very surprised to see
Eric, you. Eric, when did you get here? Good to see you, man.
Yeah. I was very surprised to hear that possibly when you were part of the, I guess it was the zoning board?
Yes, and Lauderdale by the Sea. I was part of the planning and zoning board for several years.
Boy, she sure gets around. I want to remind our listeners, you can go to Facebook Live. Just Google Facebook Legal News and Review on Thursdays at 5:30 to 7 p.m., and you'll watch the program and even past programs that were produced. You'll see we're recording today at the Kelly Ustall Building in their mock courtroom. You talk about resources. They built a $10 million building with their own mock courtroom. If you've been injured from someone else's negligence, just go to justiceforall.com. That's justiceforall.com. Also, welcome to our listeners on 96.9, 103.9, 740 AM. And, of course, our loyal listeners nationally on iHeart, TuneIn, and iRadio Now. Attorney, I do not justice to your first name. Nectaria.
No. Nectaria.
Nectaria. That's okay. Someone's doing a shot at Nova.
It's okay.
Third time's a charm.
All you got to do is say it like it's spelled.
Nectaria Chakas. I got it.
I answer anything that sounds like it.
So. Nectaria, I'm going to jump in and stop Phil before he continues to chew on his ankle.
Well, again, welcome to Legal News.
Welcome.
Thank you.
So as the resident real estate guy, I want to know, what is the difference? I know, but I want our listeners to know so they stop calling me for land use. What is the difference between real estate law and land use law?
So a land use and zoning lawyer primarily represents real estate developers or property owners, helping them, whether it's due diligence before they purchase a property or whether they've already purchased the property and they want to develop it, they often will need some sort of approval from government. And so that is what a land use and zoning lawyer does. They help a developer get all the approvals that they need in order to develop their property.
And what type of approvals are they? And before you go there, listeners, they don't do closings. They don't sue for partition.
That's correct. There are some land use and zoning lawyers that do all kinds of things. But
yeah, but there's no real estate lawyers that does land use.
Yeah, I don't know if everyone... Yeah,
they're very different.
I've heard they'd rather not do it.
Land use is hard because it's very particular. It's very current.
Local.
It's very local. So you need someone who does it full time.
So
for our listeners, so they understand, because it is confusing, like how might you spend a day at work? Like what type of stuff might you be doing for these developers in particular?
So on a day-to-day basis, what I might be working on are meetings with planning staff, meetings with elected officials, lobbying. We're called lobbyists.
Lobbying, really?
yeah.
It's
actually
a big part
required.
Of it. It's the political part.
It's a huge part, and yes, it is absolutely a very big part of it. I don't really consider myself as a lobbyist, but I'm required under the county regulations.
You registered.
Most, yeah. Yeah, if you look me up, I mean, we're registered. Both.
Well, you're dealing with a lot of government officials.
Exactly.
And you're working with them elbow
to
elbow.
That's
correct.
Working
on different projects and complying and trying to promote your client's interests.
That's right. That's right. Theoretically, we're trying to influence decisions that government is making. So we're registered as a lobbyist, and I hate even saying that word because people have such a negative
connotations
that when they hear the term lobbyist. But
same thing when they hear the word lawyer.
But that's true. Actually,
lawyers save people.
You're right
we're
about
part
that.
Of the good
but
guys.
You know, it's interesting. What is old is now new. I grew up in Chicagoland, and they have mixed use properties.
That's near Chicago.
We're used to. That's right. I live now in Boca downtown. On the first floor are restaurants and different shops, and above are the condos.
Mm-hmm.
Limited to only 9 stories, but that's a whole other story. Mm-hmm. But it makes common sense. I mean, it adds value to the area because the shopping is done there,
right.
You know?
Yes, it's one-stop
mixed
shopping.
Use, you mean?
Yeah, mixed use.
Gotcha. It's tough, though. I mean, a lot of areas, you know, have problems getting used to that when they're not, you know, as a New Yorker, I'm from New Yorker, you know, you're used to it, or Chicagoland, wherever that is, probably near Chicago.
Great pizza.
Yeah, right. You mean the pie? Anyway, you get used to that. But, you know, here, like places we haven't seen it, it's very foreign at first. But before we get to that, I'm curious, it's pretty easy to imagine where land use would come in handy for, you know, mega company styles and whatnot. But how might a smaller developer use your services?
So I actually just had an issue today with a smaller developer who's a home builder, and when he builds homes, he usually builds maybe 2 or 3, and
okay.
He purchased a property that he wants that has one single family home on it,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very large lot, and he wants to subdivide it. And so I was helping him kind of, you know, go through what it is that he needs to do in order to legally subdivide
oh, really?
That property.
So you do that as well? I mean,
that's
oh,
correct.
Wow.
He's absolutely. We represent property owners and you know, real estate developers. They can
it
be very
terrible.
Sophisticated.
I almost would have thought that'd be like beneath a land use attorney. I didn't realize you did that sort
of
thing.
Of
that's
course,
good. Educational.
Of course, absolutely. We help represent property owners, not only property owners, really business owners sometimes who are trying to get maybe a business tax license and they don't have
okay.
the right zoning. And so that then sometimes snowballs into having to get some sort of approval for their business.
Like a
variance. So maybe the building is there.
Change.
Exactly.
We
exactly.
had a big issue in Lauderhill. When I was president of the Chamber of Commerce there, there was a church that wanted to develop in the town. And the town they weren't anti the church. Just the neighborhood didn't want to have the church move in because of all the traffic.
Right.
Right.
That's always
and I couldn't believe that actually a town didn't want to have a church, which
yes.
seems to be the most...
NIMBY. They wanted a church, just not
yeah.
in their backyard.
Just maybe
right.
could have been, but...
Right.
So you work like with that?
Yeah, we've represented churches, and you know we represent hospitals, we represented universities, so it's...
Wow.
Yeah.
What about when
what
we talk about
people
business?
Who don't want it?
The people who don't want what?
Yeah, like these people who didn't want the church in their backyard. Do you also represent people who are against a zoning change, for example?
Yeah, we're often asked that question. Like, what exactly, you know, is your policy on representing both sides? And we've always been sort of focused on just promoting development. So
okay.
we are pro development. And so I think maintaining that frame of mind as we've developed our practice has helped. Has helped us keep focus.
Gotcha.
It's hard, I find it personally, and I don't know if my law partner feels the same way, he probably does, but I think it's hard to walk into a city commission meeting
mm-hmm.
advocating for a development and then walking in 2 months later opposing it, something
right.
similar. It's kind of contradictory. And so we've always just kind of taken the stance that we need to be proponents of development. We're often asked, you know, hey, can you oppose this particular project or that project? And we just try to, you know, even if we don't agree, even if we're saying, hey, yeah, we get your point, just try to keep focused on
the political
on what we
component
want.
Of that might have something to do with that,
yeah.
right?
Well, and it also has to do with just keeping focused on what is your area of practice? What is your, you know, what do you want people to think about your practice? You're proponents of development. And so that's really kind of and we're careful about, I think, about the projects that we take on. In that regard, you know, I think
we've
been pretty fortunate.
Now, with helping local businesses, do you
mm-hmm.
work with signage?
Yes. sign variances.
That's usually a big issue usually for small business owner.
Little projects, I imagine that's a smaller project, to big projects like a strip mall or a shopping center.
Of course, yes.
Oh, wow.
High-density mixed-use development makes using sustainable forms of transportation, such as walking, bicycles, or taking transit earlier. Mm-hmm. There's areas and corridors in Fort Lauderdale that's currently being developed under that, such as in St. Andrews, where we used to produce at the Alpine Jaguar, the Uptown area.
The Uptown area, yes.
It's going through
a land use amendment.
Does mixed-use properties means let's say I own a restaurant and I want to put my restaurant in that building. Does that mean I'm actually buying a condo office in that building, or is the building being rented out? When you talk about mixed use for condo.
So when we're talking about a mixed use project,
right?
We're talking about a project that incorporates two or more uses. So you could have a mixed use building, which is sort of a horizontal building, kind of like what we're in right now, that has a use on the bottom floor and then has other uses
I didn't think about that. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, Wells Fargo.
It doesn't have to be residential.
Yeah. That's correct. Right, yeah. That's
it could be two different commercial uses.
You can actually, there's some cities that are actually not even, forget about, let's put residential on the side because I think that's what we keep seeing in South Florida. People keep saying, oh, mixed use, that means it's a residential project with some ground floor retail. There are institutional uses that go along with mixed-use developments. I mean, there's some cities that have major stadiums that are being constructed, and they're building around. They're building large retail lifestyle centers around that stadium, if you will. Now, what we're talking about now is probably a little bit more in the traditional sense than what we're seeing in South Florida, which is a residential component or a hotel component or office component with some ground floor retail.
What about a mall component? Boynton Beach Mall has what was called Sears. I'm joking, what was called Sears, because Sears is coming out of bankruptcy.
You date yourself now.
Yeah, leave the comedy to the professionals, Phil.
But they want to build a mixed-use property at the Boynton Beach Mall in place of the Sears.
Wait, what do you mean by mixed-use? Like
mixed-use, where they're going to have...
residential?
Yes, they're going to have residential
mall?
At the mall.
That's weird.
And part addressed to the mall.
That takes Boynton Beach Mall to a whole other level.
Yeah. Well, they're taking...
they're doing some more of
they're
like
tearing
a
down
horizontal
the Sears.
Type
yes.
of...
Well, no. They're tearing down the Sears, and they're going to go vertical.
They're going to go vertical.
Right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
There's no space in Boynton Beach anymore.
Can you imagine living at a mall?
No, actually, I kind of like it. Yeah, well, come to think of it.
But I would imagine that the tax base that would be a whole nother calculation for the town when you're representing your developer. Mm-hmm. That would have to go into a whole calculation to try to make the sale or to lobby for it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that, especially in certain areas of cities, that you want to see and government wants to see. Density and mixed use concentrated in certain parts of their city. And where we're at right now, I mean, this is seen in a tremendous amount of growth in the last 10 years. There's a development
downtown Fort Lauderdale.
Far from where we're sitting that was developed. It's about 5 acres and has retail, about 20,000 square feet of retail and about 384 units. And it sold shortly after it was built for $150 million.
You build it and they will come.
So you're a moneymaker, right? So, I mean, in reality, you're a moneymaker. Literally, your job is to create money from air. I mean, let me explain.
We give certainly development approvals give value to land.
Yeah, you're creating, the old story, right? You have $1 million, you spend $1 million to build a house. Okay, so that $1 million went into the workers and the people and the prior landowner. Now the land with the house is worth $2 million. You've created $500,000. When you change the use of property to a more valuable use, you've literally created wealth out of air.
Yeah, and when you have mixed-use districts, they tend to
That's
have
kinda cool.
the property values tend to be higher because you do have that flexibility.
Well, plus the developer wouldn't do it unless it made them more money. It wouldn't make sense. You're always going to be changing to what at least you feel is a higher value use of the land.
Right.
That's really cool. I didn't think of it that way, but that's actually kind
of
neat.
What is it? That the value of your land is what somebody wants to pay for it or what you can do with it.
And the law favors this. Your job is favored in common law because, you know, one of the old maxims of property law is the law always favors the most valuable use of a land. That's a maxim. That's a basic property law tenet.
Oh, look at that. Mr. Real Estate Lawyer over here.
I'm telling you.
That's the big bucks.
But mixed-use properties, they protect your investment in the building.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to retain and increase values.
And they help the owner diversify, you know, and so if they're not just focused on one component of a use, like the residential, they may have a building that has hotel, residential, office.
In Boca, they're building a Mandarin hotel.
Yeah.
That's also residential.
That's kind of cool.
Isn't it?
Do you do speculative work, too? Like, do developers come to you and say, hey, I'm thinking about going to XYZ City and doing this change. Can you make that work? Is that a good idea? Or do they usually hire you after they made the decision and you have to make it reality?
A little bit of both. I think people come to us and they want to know, what can I do with this land now, as is? What are the zoning regulations? And then, you know, what can I do to maximize the value, and whether that's getting a site plan approved, whether that's rezoning the property, whether it's a land use amendment, and then also what is going on around that particular property, because that oftentimes makes a big difference.
Gotcha. You get involved in like the environmental type concerns with the property, or is that a different subspecialty?
That's probably more. We do get involved with some environmental issues, but that's usually a whole other subset. We get involved with like wetlands and things like that.
Yeah,
but
that's what I meant.
In urban infill development now, which is what everything is going to, you don't see a lot of those types of issues.
Because you're rebuilding.
The infrastructure is there to some extent and may need to be upgraded. I know that that's been in the paper a lot. Urban infill development is you're already dealing with the roadway network. You're already dealing with existing infrastructure. It's not like building out in Pembroke Pines where you start with a clean slate.
Sure.
And you're building your own roads. You're building your own infrastructure, and they're all master planned communities. With urban infill, it can be in some ways more challenging because you are dealing with what's there.
Yeah, but it used to not be that way. It seemed like a hodgepodge of development in Fort Lauderdale before they got their act together.
That's always, right? Well, isn't that always a newer city, like, is going to go through that phase?
Sure. And I think it also, there have been lifestyle changes, too.
Yeah,
so maybe 25, 30 years ago, people weren't necessarily interested in living downtown. And now there's been, I think, a rebirth.
Well, they want to downsize. The kids are out of the house. The dog passed away.
Yeah.
Well, I think also millennials now, they don't want to have a car. They don't want to own one.
Yeah,
so they want to walk to places. And people want to be more health conscious, more European, I guess.
As long as they get out of the guest room, it's all good. Right?
That's right.
What about issues like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to ask about financing. Do you deal with financing?
We don't have to deal with financing. We write letters for the finance company, zoning letters, confirming what the entitlements are for. But we don't, personally have to deal with the financing issues. Mr. Singer's court.
Yeah, that's what I kind of do. But that's cool. I mean, the difference, people don't understand the differences in the I'm more of a generalist. You're clearly a specialist. What about issues of like drift? Like, the fact that, sometimes these more expensive uses displace homeowners or small businesses. I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, but does that come up and do you have something you have to deal with the governments and how do you deal with that?
Well, I can tell you we represented a developer of a large shopping center nearby and they have a large anchor tenant that I don't want to say names, but
that's fine.
There is that sort of element, when you come into a neighborhood and people are worried, like, oh my gosh, wait a second, what's going to happen with the other businesses in this corridor? And it is something you have to overcome.
And the politicians might make a big deal or something, and you need to be prepared for it.
And sometimes you don't come up with solutions to that. That's just sometimes something you have to deal with and accept.
But isn't the government more agreeable to blighted areas to make changes?
Sure.
And
that's the whole purpose of why they create a community redevelopment area.
Isn't there pushback so oftentimes? You know, like, where do you put the low-income housing? Like, we read about that. Does that come up as an issue?
Yeah, that does come up as an issue.
We have very little bit over by the ocean. You know, very little bit of
by the ocean
housing.
Is very little, and that's potentially. What about my least favorite subject, climate change? Does that come up a lot nowadays when you're dealing with this?
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely does. They have made major changes in Broward County, just really rewrote their comprehensive plan and had a strong focus on climate change and sea level rise, and it's something that people are paying attention to. You know, I think you can only, you're starting to see it actually, development responding to that. And you could be walking down a street and where you used to once have the entrance to a store was right off the sidewalk. You now see stairs. Why is that?
Because they hate disabled people?
No.
Gary.
Think about it.
No,
where's your finished floor elevation's got to be now?
Yeah, it's got to be higher.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're starting to see development, you know, complying with those new regulations in order to respond to sea level rise and all those concerns that you're reading about.
Interesting.
Yeah. When we had Commissioner Chip Lamarck on, remember?
Chip, yeah, I do.
He governs all the beaches areas. Yep. Now, you know
he's
him.
He's like
obviously.
A senator now or something, right?
Is he?
I don't know. He did something recently. I saw on the news. He did something cool.
He talked about the changes that are in place that are
because of our show.
In place.
I just want to point out.
Yeah, right. Regarding global warming and the use of property. Yeah. But if I bought a property and I had no intention of being mixed use, it's not zoned for that, and then maybe I heard this show or I did my due diligence, say mixed property, I mean, over $1 trillion of construction in the United States, a good portion of that went towards mixed properties as well, then can I reasonably have my building changed to a mixed property? Or it's not that easy?
It depends on where you're located. Sometimes there's usually a process you have to go through if you want to create, you know, a mixed-use development. There are certain districts and zoning districts, I mean, that are already created to be mixed-use, like where we're at right now is a regional activity center. There are other regional activity centers as well, not just here in Fort Lauderdale. The beach has a regional activity center here in Fort Lauderdale. Hallandale has them. Hollywood, I mean, they're all over the place. Those are, by their very nature, mixed use. They allow a mixture of uses, usually with certain thresholds, but those are mixed use areas. So you also have other areas, like, for instance, if you have a neighborhood, like the neighborhood that we're overlooking right now, which is a residential area. It's zoned residential, and you cannot, under most circumstances, do any sort of commercial development
Parkland.
On those.
Parkland. It's very little commercial.
Yeah.
You know, on purpose, and that's their thing. I wouldn't want to try to change a use in Parkland.
Yeah. You have to look at what the underlying land use designation is. So the zoning is another layer. It's usually more specific, but your land use designation, I sort of think of it as like the Constitution. And then you have the zoning, which is sort of like your statutes. And it's hard to change the Constitution. It's harder.
Well, Davie, they allow horses, chickens,
they
goats.
Allow, yeah, well, that,
Davie's
that's
changed a lot, too, more live. Towards
absolutely.
What's his name?
They
Marty
have,
Squares,
they also have,
right?
But Davie also has a regional activity center. They have a mixed-use area. They've decided this is where they're going to focus their development in high-density, you know, uses, which is where Nova University is located.
It's a neat area. It's
and
changed a lot.
Absolutely.
That's where I used to
They've done a really, really nice job.
They have, actually. They've managed it well.
They really have done a very nice job.
What about green? I'd be remiss because we're getting close running out of time if I didn't ask more about green. I mean, today, I don't know when this airs, but today AOC came out, who's one of our new Congress people, and said that in order for her green plan, every building in America needed to be replaced or significantly changed to be green.
You're talking about LEED certified?
No, I'm talking whatever. I'm talking ridiculous political statement by a new member of Congress. But in reality, because that was just a lead-in, how much is green playing into development and all this stuff that we're talking about today?
It's definitely something that I think a lot of our clients think about during the design of a project.
Okay.
A lot of cities already have green initiatives and checklists of things that they make the developer, you know, kind of go through in, you know, I think it's the town of Davie, actually, just talking about them. they have a checklist.
Sure.
And other municipalities do too, but Davie just came to mind just because I have a project there and I just remembered recently seeing it. It's a list that just says these are the things that we want you to have. And what are you providing? What is your development providing in terms of efficiency and in green building initiatives? The Florida Building Code also already has
a lot
of energy. I mean, it's changed over the last, I would say, probably 4 years now. And it's really focused on how energy efficient your building is. And that goes right down to the glass that you're using on the building. Among other things. So it's definitely...
Imagine it's a busy time for you. I mean, Broward has made massive shifts in population and population density over the last 10, 15 years, which are only continuing, and we're out of space unless we encroach Everglades, which hopefully we do not.
That's a natural barrier. That's why this is a very linear
area. It is until
area.
It's not, right? But let's hope it stays that way at least forever.
Well,
how are... you keeping up? I mean, you must be so incredibly busy with the amount of changes as urban infill is happening. That must be just such a huge trend of zoning changes.
It is, and it's a good time to be a land use and zoning lawyer, I think.
And I think
it's a good time to need one.
So how would someone get in touch with you if they did need a land use attorney?
So they can reach me, our website, www.lockrylaw.com. And I'm also on LinkedIn.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So you can find me on LinkedIn.
A phone number?
And my phone number, my direct phone number is 954-779-1123. And the name of the firm is Lockery & Chakas.
And if you Google Attorney Chakas, you come right up.
Yes. I think I'm the only Chakas.
I
think I'm the only Nectaria.
Yeah, and your website actually places very high.
I am definitely the only Nectaria.
You absolutely are.
Others, but I'm the only land use lawyer with the name Nectaria.
Nectaria Chakas.
Yeah.
When you think land use.
You're so passionate an attorney. You love what you do.
I love it. I really do. I feel like I'm part of a creative process.
Everyone knows the difference between land use and real estate.
And real estate.
So thank you very much for being here, Nectaria. Thank you to my co-host. And most importantly, thank you to our listeners. Be safe and
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.